It's the Congressional Corner. I'm Alan Chartok, here with Joe Courtney. He's a Democrat in Connecticut's 2nd District, in office since 2007. And Joe Courtney, I know that you're in the district where they build nuclear submarines.
Right.
Does all of this angst mean we might need some more submarines?
Well, there's no question that, the landscape, or the seascape, I should say, out there has been changing really over the last 3 or 4 years. The Navy, under President Obama, actually has boosted shipbuilding. If you look at the 8 years of his administration prior, versus the 8 years before, the Obama administration doubled the number of ships under construction during his time. And at the end of his administration, they had been hard at work for 2 solid years on a force structure assessment in terms of what's needed in the future. The recapitalization of the Russian Navy, which is, again, one of Putin's, hallmark, pushes, has again, changed, I think, everyone's assessment about, where our sailors and subs and ships are needed. And the Office of Naval Intelligence actually came out with a public document. Your listeners can get it online, called the Russian Navy, A Historic Transition, which pretty much catalogs the increase in shipbuilding that's taken place over the last 5 or 6 years or so. So to answer your question simply, the Obama assessment has said that we do need to boost construction of submarines. Again, we're pretty chock-a-block right now already with what, has been going on over the last 4 or 5 years or so. But I think, all the sort of demand signals that are out there right now in terms of, what's happening in the North Atlantic, the Black Sea, the Mediterranean, is going to require just more ships. It's not going to be out of control crazy. I think, we're not talking about, the Reagan buildup when we had a 600-ship Navy. I mean, we're probably talking more in the 340s in terms of what the, the force structure assessment came out with.
Joe Courtney, I know that you're scheduling a foreign affairs roundtable. And I guess the thing we've been talking about on our roundtable program is, will it all come together? Is Syria and North Korea and the Russians, is it all tied together, or are these separate and distinct issues?
Well, again, it's going to be, as you point out, tonight in Hartford, we're doing an event with the delegation. Jim Himes is joining us, who's on the Intelligence Committee and obviously is deeply involved in the investigation of, last fall's election, which I actually do think is part of sort of Putin's, sort of reimagined modern warfare, as they call it, where, they're blending, again, this very kind of aggressive, activity that's happening on the ground, in the air, on the sea, with, this sort of cyber intelligence gathering, misinformation campaigns, political messaging, all this stuff that ultimately is about disrupting what I think are, international structures that have been in place really since the end of World War II, whether it's NATO, the EU, the Atlantic Alliance. And frankly, President Trump's sort of position on this has created, I think, actually a lot of angst out there, particularly with our allies, about just, what is the U.S. policy towards Russia? So I think that's going to be the primary focus tonight. Obviously, the Asia-Pacific realm is something that President Obama had called for a pivot, to Asia, because, again, tensions and issues over there about freedom of navigation. And that's, again, you sort of mix all that together. This administration just has really, I think, confused a lot of people, to be charitable, and obviously raised skepticism and suspicion amongst many others about just, where are we going? What's the priorities? And, what are these connections that every single day seem to be getting exposed in the press, the latest, the FISA warrant against Carter Page, who Trump described as one of his top foreign policy advisors, who, according to the Washington Post, was in contact with Russian officials during the campaign. These are questions which we all deserve an answer, and particularly our allies.
Do you think that Putin is happy with his... I'm assuming that what we have read is true, and that Putin, in fact, and his people were trying to influence the election in Trump's favor. Do you think he's happy with that now?
You know, I actually think his goal was more disruption than, you know, necessarily an outcome. And so to that extent, I think, you know, mission accomplished. I mean, it's, you know, again, raised this uncertainty with the, you know, world, you know, the world structures or institutions, NATO, EU, that he views as the adversary. So to that extent, I mean, I think, you know, I think he prefers the outcome that he that we all got versus having Hillary Clinton in the White House.
No, I was going to say, I have a theory, Joe. And my theory is that if Donald Trump is impeached, it's going to be over the smoke that is now showing us the huge number of people in his camp who were in touch with the Russians and Manafort and all of these other guys. And if it can be proven that Trump was at the apex or the center of all of this stuff, that's the end. So now it's interesting that his generals are all saying tough things about Putin and the Russians, but not the president of the United States.
No, that is absolutely the missing voice that's out there. And again, we, over the last couple months or so, myself and a lot of other members, you know, we've had visits from, you know, parliamentary colleagues from Europe, you know, some of the, we talked to embassy officials from, again, we're talking longtime Western European allies. And the, you know, the response that we're getting from them and the feeling that we're getting is just this real question of confusion about, you know, yes, you know, General Mattis says a lot of the right things when he went to NATO back in February. Tillerson sort of says the right thing, although his comment about Ukraine at the Italian conference there before his trip to Moscow, where he basically said, why should the taxpayers of the U.S. care about the Ukraine? You know, that kind of stuff has a huge reverberation in Europe. And but again, the voice that I think is the one that ultimately has to be heard from is the president. And despite all of the stuff that's been going on with Russia, and, you know, just let's, we can even set aside Syria for a moment. I mean, as we know, the Russians now are deploying intermediate range missiles with nuclear warheads in western Russia. That is a flat violation of the INF treaty, the Intermediate Nuclear Force Treaty of 1987 that Ronald Reagan signed into law. And so there's stuff happening, you know, with just even since the inauguration, that, you know, there really needs to be some clarity from the president about, you know, just what is his position on this? And the you know, the silence or the ambivalence or the confusion, you know, again, just feeds this suspicion that people have about, you know, whether or not there's just some infatuation or connection or whatever that he has with you know, the Russian government and the Russian leadership that...
Joe, or that they have the possibility of blackmailing him because of his earlier actions. That's what you worry about. And we only have a couple of seconds. You want to respond to that?
Well, I mean, again, it's I'm not on the Intelligence Committee. I know these guys are working hard, and particularly on the Senate side, where it seems to be more functional than Chairman Nunes's behavior on the House side. But again, this story is just not, you know, letting up. In the Carter Page warrant that, again, just came out in the last 24 hours just shows that it's this thing is getting deeper and more, there's more meat on the bone.
Indeed. We've been talking to Congressman Joe Courtney, a great favorite of ours, a guy who comes on and gives us a perspective that we don't hear in other places. So, Joe, when we come back the next time, I'm going to ask you about Congress and military force, okay?